listening to a CNBC TV 18 podcast.
Hello and a warm welcome. You're listening to the Poll Pundit podcast with me, Jude Sanath. And with me on the show today is Sumanth Raman, political analyst based in Chennai. Sumanth, thanks for joining us here. Great to have you with us here as always.
Welcome, Jude.
Right, we're discussing all that N.K. Stalin and the new Tamil Nadu government did in its first few days in power, even as the DMK has scripted a bit of a mandate, winning decisively in Tamil Nadu, winning a majority all by itself, and the new government quickly swinging into power. No sooner was the swearing-in conducted. That very first decision, of course, that N.K. Stalin made, putting pen on paper, was COVID relief, a sum of 4,000 rupees for every family below the poverty line, as far as Tamil Nadu is concerned. I need to have you weigh in on this, Sumanth, if you will. Something along expected lines, given that the Dravidian movement and the DMK, and the AIADMK for that matter, in the past has been very welfare-oriented as far as Tamil Nadu is concerned. So something along expected lines, nothing too surprising there.
Yeah, right. This was a poll promise. Originally, it was supposed to be to have been given on the 3rd of June, the birthday of Mr. Stalin's father, late Mr. Karunanidhi, who was a former chief minister of the state. So, but due to the COVID issue and the fact that a lockdown has been announced in Tamil Nadu from the 10th to the 24th, the first installment was being released in the month of May itself. In fact, from the 10th, the people are starting to receive the 2,000 rupees first installment. So, I think this is expected because it had been very clearly and categorically mentioned in the manifesto. And except that it has been advanced from June to May. Other than that, there is no major surprise in that decision.
Right. Before we get any further, I also want to quickly list down the first few government orders passed by the new government. No sooner did the 33 ministers take the oath of office. So not only has the Tamil Nadu government sanctioned 4,000 rupees per BPL family, the government has also extended its state-run health insurance scheme to cover COVID-related expenses, even at private hospitals. Not only that, it slashed prices of milk at state-run milk cooperative, namely Arvind, by around 3 rupees per litre. The government has also promised free transport for women, children, working women, and of course, girl students, and has also considered extending this to transgenders as well. So, by and large, Sumanth, you'd see, again, welfare-oriented measures being given priority here, but it's going to cost the state exchequer a bit of money now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think these other two measures, two out of the three which you mentioned, which is namely the free transport for women in ordinary bus services, I mean, that has got a little bit of a catch because not all government bus services are ordinary. Many of them are express and limited stop services and so on. So, but still, the fact that this was a poll promise, that's going to cost the exchequer a bit. The other, the reduction in milk price by 3 rupees per liter of Arvind milk, that again was a poll promise. The free treatment in private hospitals for COVID patients was actually announced last year. In fact, after this announcement, I've been trying very hard to find out what is new in this announcement. I haven't succeeded so far. But that was a decision which was made, if I remember right, in May of 2020, when the previous government already said that COVID treatment would be covered under the Chief Minister's Comprehensive Health Insurance Scheme. So I'm not sure what they were referring to when they put out the order on that. But you're right. I mean, the 4,000 rupees scheme itself alone is expected to cost the state exchequer approximately 8,300 crores. And you must remember, there is a huge problem in Tamil Nadu with the ration card not actually having been rationalized very well. There are approximately 2.07 crore of what are in colloquial terms called the white ration cards or the rice ration cards.
Which is above the poverty line, right?
Yeah, which are eligible for this 4,000 rupees and earlier for the previous government's 2,500 during Pongal and so on. See, the basic point is 2.07 crores. If you multiply it approximately 4 people per family, you get more than the population of the state. So clearly, there is a crying need to reduce the and rationalize the list. I mean, clearly, you can't say the entire population of the state is below the poverty line. So that is a problem which governments have not paid much attention to. Because honestly, you will see people in cars driving up and collecting this relief money, which is really unfair. And this is vital money at a time when the state's finances are very, very precariously placed. So this rationalization, I hope this government will take it up. The previous government did not. And certainly, I don't honestly think that the number of cards should be at the most beyond 1 crore. Now, 2.07 crore ration cards are getting these benefits.
Absolutely. So a need for rationalization is no doubt a priority, especially given the ambition surrounding the implementation of such schemes. But, you know, Stalin has been winning a lot of plaudits, Sumant, for going about implementing or getting the ground running, getting down to business in lightning speed. In fact, the government wasted no time in announcing that list of 33 cabinet ministers. Do you think the DMK and now the ruling government, of course, an extension of the party's high command, is cognizant of the need to expedite governance in this state?
I think the COVID situation is quite bad. And that means that they don't have time. I mean, you can't settle down in a leisurely manner and start to look at things because, I mean, even on the day that they were getting sewn in, there were cries for oxygen coming in from various hospitals and so on. So there is no time for the government to sort of settle down. And they've had to hit the ground running, which they have done, which is most welcome. And most of their attentions on the last few days have been only on fighting COVID, which is absolutely the right thing to do. Unfortunately, two of their ministers have tested COVID positive. And this is very, very unfortunate because they were also exposed to the rest of their ministerial colleagues at the swearing-in ceremony. So one only hopes that, you know, that they recover soon and the infection does not spread to the others who also participated in the swearing-in ceremony. And you must remember that after the swearing-in ceremony, there was a breakfast at which, obviously, the masks had to be removed. So one just hopes that the infection is restricted to these two gentlemen and they recovered soon as well. But I think that the government really has not had too much time and we should wait a few more weeks to see how they measure up to this crisis.
Right. You know, the day that the government took over and assumed office, and of course, this is par for the course, we saw a number of bureaucratic changes, given that Stalin went about doing a bureaucratic overhaul in a sense. Chennai got a new police commissioner, a new chief secretary. There were also changes in that four other additional secretaries were appointed to the chief minister's office. But the health department, by and large, has remained untouched, given, you know, presumably the interest for continuity. A magnanimous decision, you'd think, especially given that the health secretary, Dr. Radhakrishnan, is someone who's known to be quite good at his job?
Oh, yes. I mean, the continuity in the health sector particularly was most important because you will recall that, you know, in the middle of the pandemic last year, the then health secretary, Bila Rajesh, was replaced and Mr. Radhakrishnan was brought back because of his firefighting abilities, which he has demonstrated from the days of the tsunami. So I think that he has been one of the faces of the fight against COVID-19 in Tamil Nadu. And I think that it makes enormous sense not to disturb him immediately, at least until we get a grip on the second wave and you know, manage to control the number of cases. Leaving him in that seat would make a lot of sense. And I think Mr. Stalin has done well to do that. Of course, a lot of others have been changed. But Tamil Nadu has a large pool of good IAS officers. And people like Mr. Uday Chandran or Mr. Umanath, who've been drafted in, and Mr. Irayanbu, who's been brought in as the chief secretary. Many of them have a good track record. And Mr. Shankar Jival, who's come in as a new commissioner of police. Mr. Gagandeep Bedi, who's again known to be a very dynamic officer, who's taken over as the commissioner of the Corporation of Chennai. So I think that he has got his team in place. And it seems to be a good team. But, of course, the proof of the pudding will eventually be in the eating.
No doubt about it. But, you know, going forward, I'm also curious to find out, what are your thoughts on the choice of ministries? I know for a fact there was a lot of discourse and conversation as to whether the new crop of the DMK will get positions of power, especially the likes of, you know, a Dr. Erilan. I don't think too many people expected Udayanidhi Stalin to get a position, especially given that M.K. Stalin himself would have wanted someone close to run the party affairs. But you'd think the DMK has partially gone back to the old guard when it comes to ministerial berths.
No, the ministers, I would say out of 34 ministers, I think about 25, 27 chose themselves. I mean, I had prepared a list of possible ministers 2-3 days before the swearing in. And I found that I had only 3 names who didn't feature and, you know, about 3 or 4. And I didn't draw up 34. I put down a list of around 27, 28 ministers. So I think that many of them are veterans, Mr. Duraimurugan, Mr. Nehru, Ponmudi, Eva Velu, K.K. Sitaram, etc. And all of them are veterans. Ma Subramaniam, who's got the health portfolio, he's rated very highly. He did an excellent job as the mayor of Chennai in a previous stint. The surprise for me has been the 2 heavy portfolios that have been given to Mr. Sendil Balaji, who has a slew of cases against him. And he joined the DMK itself just hardly 3 years ago. And he was a former AIADMK minister. And he's been given 2 very heavy portfolios of electricity and the Tasmac liquor outlets, which are both are huge money spinners. And it is a big surprise to see him being appointed. Other than that, I think with minor, you know, differences of opinion, more or less the ministry was on expected lines.
Yeah, and the likes of P. Thyagarajan, given finance, MIT Sloan alumnus, having worked at the Lehman Brothers and Standard Chartered, you feel one of the most qualified ministers in India at the moment?
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, because as an individual, in terms of his educational or academic record is one thing, but he does not have administrative experience, you know. So essentially, this is the first major portfolio at any level that he would be handling. And, you know, it really depends on how he performs. But, you know, certainly for the people of the state, everybody hopes that he performs well, simply because the state is in a fairly critical situation. And we definitely need, you know, every bit of expertise that we can find. But I was a little surprised. That was a surprise for me, because I would have thought that the finance portfolio usually is a heavyweight portfolio. And in most states, it goes to usually somebody who's in the top 3 or 4 in the cabinet in terms of seniority. So to that extent, it is a surprise.
Right. Stepping back from governance to party politics for just a bit, you think the DMK pretty much has its house sorted in terms of the names that will represent the party, you know, when it comes to parliamentary affairs, and the remainder that will represent the party when it comes to state affairs? You have the likes of a Kanimuri, a Dayanidhi Maran, T.R. Balu, A. Raja, all parliamentarians right now, taking care of the center, you'd think, while the rest, the likes of Udayanidhi, other senior MLAs, taking care of party affairs in the state. Has the demarcation been clearly made, in your opinion?
No, I think that this is not a demarcation that perhaps was planned, you know, because in 2019, many of the DMK heavyweights like T.R. Balu and A. Raja and others, Dayanidhi Maran, they won the elections and they all went to Delhi. Now, what role they will have in Delhi, we have been seeing. We don't have much of a role. None of the opposition parties seem to have very much of a role in Delhi in this present parliament. But the bigger point is, from the longer term perspective, so Udayanidhi will certainly be groomed as a successor to his father. And the grooming will necessarily mean that all alternate power centers should not be encouraged. So I'm not too sure that, you know, heavyweights in the party, those with large, you know, public following and so on, will be allowed to grow beyond a particular stage, because then, you know, it may become more tricky for the heir apparent. I have no doubt at all that before, you know, a year or so, Mr. Udayanidhi will be inducted into the ministry. Maybe not given a very heavy portfolio just to enable him to get administrative experience, but my expectation is probably a year from now, or within a year from now, he should be in the ministry.
Right. You know, stepping back again from party politics, I just want to throw some light and dedicate some time to the Dravidian movement and its ideology and how it has evolved over time. You know, when the swearing-in took place, Sumant, you'd remember just a few days ago, everyone took note, or, you know, those beyond the Vindhyas, outside of Tamil Nadu, took note as to how Stalin made it a point not to take the name of God while swearing in, but choosing to make that oath in the name of his conscience, something that even his father has alluded to several times in going about to say, and I quote, "My conscience is my God." You know, if you look at the DMK heavyweights since the 50s and 60s, from a Periyar to a C.N. Annadurai to a Karunanidhi and now to M.K. Stalin, you're noticing a very, you know, conscious, rationalist, atheist set of beliefs that have also been propagated as the ideology of the party in towards varying spectrums. You know, while those like a Periyar, who was never part of the DMK but part of the Dravidian movement by and large, advocated a very extreme form of atheism and rationalism. You saw a softer rationalism from Annadurai. Karunanidhi again was more bold and brazen. What do you expect from an M.K. Stalin? Do you feel he can afford to be that way? Or do you also foresee some pandering to the masses when it comes to ideology and how it can evolve from here?
See, let us be very clear. Mr. Stalin, throughout the campaign, you know, was to sort of defend the party against charges that they were anti-God, particularly anti-Hindu and so on. So that became a constant refrain during the campaign. Now, the very important thing is that we have to see is that rationalism and atheism is pretty much, you know, virtually extinct in Tamil Nadu. But certainly atheism is almost gone. So there is no way that Mr. Stalin can beyond, you know, token gestures to placate the DK wing of the party, the Dravida Karagam wing of the party, which has got more extreme views on this issue. Beyond that, I don't think Mr. Stalin can even attempt to steer the party in that direction. Most of the DMK ministers are worshippers. Most of the party, 80% of the party, made up of worshippers. And Mr. Stalin has made it very clear that his personal beliefs are restricted to him. His family, including his wife, are very devout worshippers. And he has made no secret of that. And he has even said that in our family, everybody is allowed to practice their faith and belief, which is a good thing. So I think that this rationalism, atheism, I mean, a little bit of playing to the gallery and to placate the extreme forces who are in the DK and who exert influence on the DMK, that we will see for some more time. So for that reason, he may make some noises. But in terms of any concrete decisions being made using atheism as a basis, no way. I mean, I think had the DMK even attempted to go down that path, you remember Mr. Stalin actually had himself photographed holding a veil of Lord Murugan during the election campaign.
Yes.
So, I mean, I can't see the government doing anything to further atheism or rationalism, beyond making some token noise.
All right, let's step away from the DMK and the government and dedicate the last few minutes of this podcast to what's been developing in the opposition camp, the AIADMK. First time out of power in the last 10 years, still charting their post-Jayalalitha era in terms of the way forward, in terms of who their leader is going to be. It has wildly oscillated in the past between the likes of a Sasikala to an OPS, to EPS, who very admirably finished his four-year term, whatever was left of it, but finishing it to its completion. There's been a lot of confusion, a lot of to and fro, a lot of deliberation in terms of who the man is who has what it takes to steer that party, even as it braces for a five-year-long opposition tenure. I know for a fact that the party was meeting for a couple of days. It has now elected EPS, Edappadi K. Palaniswamy, as the leader of the opposition. Do you see this lasting, Sumanth, or do you feel the OPS faction will try to play spoil sport? Because we know for a fact that OPS has never hid his ambitions to take a stronger role in that party and has also felt rather, overwhelmed by the shadow of EPS that has been in play in the last 4 years. Do you expect some sort of, disharmony in the AIADMK ranks when it comes to top leadership going forward?
Look, there will be murmurs for some time, but to me, it's very clear. I mean, Mr. Edappadi Palaniswamy has salvaged the party, has fought off a major split in the party, has held together a government which was expected to last for a few weeks, has held it together for the full term of almost 4 years, and has performed quite well in the last 1.5 to 2 years, so much so that the party which after 10 years in office still managed a more than decent showing, picking up 66 seats, with the alliance picking up 75 seats. There is nothing to even, debate on who should have been the opposition leader. This should have been sorted out in the first meeting itself. I mean, Paneer Selvam, from whatever I heard, at the after the first meeting, they decided to give Mr. OPF over the weekend time to sort of cool down and come around to accepting Mr. Edappadi Palaniswami. But let's say, in his region, he swept the election. Whether the entire Kongu belt, the AIADMK has 66 MLAs in the assembly, 40 of them are from Mr. Edappadi Palaniswami's Kongu belt. Whether it's Coimbatore, Salem, Erode, Tirupur, Pollachi, and so on. So they swept out of 59 seats. The AIADMK won 41 seats in that region. So they are his vote bank. They are in the assembly because of EPS. And OPS, we saw when he came out and conducted his Dharma Yuddham earlier against Shashikala, he could hardly gather 10 MLAs around him. Not even, that number. So OPS is no longer a mass leader, no longer, whether he was one itself is questionable. Whereas EPS has now emerged as the tallest leader in the AIADMK. And it is only fair that, he is the leader of the opposition and the leader of the AIADMK legislative party in the house. There is no, I think that matter is resolved now. OPS can try to stir up trouble, but I don't see him having significant backing in the party at this stage.
Right. I think one thing can be said fair and square, that going into the future, Tamil Nadu pretty much has its leadership puzzles more or less sorted, with Stalin being the chief minister and the unquestionable leader of the DMK, even as the AIADMK has pretty much resolved that EPS or Edappadi K. Palaniswami will be the man to lead the party both outside and within the state assembly. So that's all about Tamil Nadu. We discussed the way forward, the first few government orders that the new government passed, and what is likely to be in store for the state as the lockdown and the months beyond progresses. Sumant Raman, great to have you with us here as always. Thank you so very much for joining us. And you keep tuning in and watching CNBC TV 18 and logging in to CNBCTV18.com. This has been a Poll Pundit podcast. Thank you so much for listening.